Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. I'm Jane Marie Schaefer.
And I am Phil Vacchio.
And this is the Herzog Law Firm Estate and Medicaid Planning Show, where we answer your questions about estate planning, wills, trusts, Medicaid planning, probate. It is a call-in show. We're happy to take your questions at 518-476-5900. So, Phil, how are you on this first day of fall?
I'm good. You definitely feel it in the air, right? Starting to see the leaves falling.
Yes, that's right.
You're going to feel it all right, yeah.
Now, I say it's chillier this morning, but it's been pretty chilly in the mornings.
Yeah, overnight lows are going to be in the 40s, 50s, and here it comes.
That's right, here it comes. Get your snow shovels out.
Yeah. Okay, you have your pumpkin spice stuff all set to go here?
Oh, yeah, it's all lined up. All the variations of pumpkin spice ready
to
go.
Right.
I swear that stuff is out in July.
That's right.
People love it. It's like an obsession.
I know.
It's not just coffee, it's everything else. It's muffins,
cereal. Oh, yeah.
All that. My son and I went to the Shenandoah versus Bolson Spa football game last night. First time in the area. My son was, all about going, but that football season too. That's one of the perks of fall. So, not all bad. Winter coming.
Right. I miss those days. My son played high school football, and those were so fun every weekend.
That's exciting. Great. It's a nice environment.
Exciting. And every October, I would buy pink socks for the whole team.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's great.
Nice.
Yeah. The boys love that. They would be putting pink all over themselves.
That's great.
That was fun.
So it's also Alzheimer's walk season for us as well.
Yes, it is. We do that every fall. And that's really great.
I think the first one's coming next weekend, isn't it?
Yes. Next weekend, it is in Schenectady at Mohawk Harbor. Right.
Oh, okay, right, yeah.
I did see that on
TV.
Yes.
Somebody promoted that, yes.
Oh, nice.
That's great.
Yeah, I'll be going to that. Are you going to
Everybody
that one?
Everybody come out.
I may be going to that one.
I think I'm going to that one as
You're
well.
You're going to that one, yes. I'm going to try to make it to most of them. Although, following that, we have two on one day. Right?
Yeah, what is that?
Queensbury and Columbia Green, and they're both on October 14th. So Queensbury is up at Adirondack Community College, and the Columbia one is at Columbia Green Community College. And you can find out about all of these, on our website. You can get to the Alzheimer's Walks or the Alzheimer's website. There's a link to donate or start a team or come walk if you want to.
Yep. Obviously a great cause. We see it every day with our clients. Such a persistent disease that's becoming more and more common, it seems like. I feel like every year more of my clients have it.
Right.
And I don't know, maybe it's recently, but a lot of younger individuals I've seen.
Yeah, it seems like getting it as well. Somebody that's affected.
Oh, yeah. Everyone knows, I'm sure, at least one person, if not more than that. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I did with my old firm last year, I did the Albany walk for the first time, and it was great. Mm-hmm. But do it really big at Herzog. We really are big proponents of it, which is nice. It's a great environment.
Yeah, the Albany walk is the October 21st.
Yes.
And it's back at Siena College.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, was it the...
It was at the Crossings.
Crossings last year, yeah.
For a little bit.
The big park. Yeah.
Which was nice, but Siena College is where it had been before, so where it is that
That's
Saturday.
Good. Bring it back, and it is.
That's right. So, Phil, I have some questions for you about...
Oh. See if I could answer. I'll do my best.
Sure. So I've asked, I'm sure as you do, clients come in and we're talking about their accounts, what assets they own, and they're like, well, I have a trust. I'm like, you have a trust?
Mm-hmm.
Really? Did the lawyer set up a trust for you? They're like, no, I went to the bank. I have a trust.
Mm.
Okay.
Yep.
That's a trust company.
That's right. And then, we dig a little further. Well, or I look at the bank statement and it says, look, it has... in trust for on there, ITF.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Which is a good thing.
Which is a
good thing. Just not what they might think it is.
That's right. Is that really a trust or what is that?
No. So in trust for is a designation that some financial institutions use basically for appointing a beneficiary, right?
Mm-hmm.
The same thing you do when my clients come in, one of the first things we do is try to go through, A, their family situation, and then B, all their assets. So accounts, what type of accounts. We always send out a questionnaire beforehand.
Right.
Some people do it. Some people say, I'm not doing homework, and right. I refuse. But regardless, we have that conversation when they first come in, and that's one of the first things we're always looking for. What, you know, depending on the type of accounts, mm-hmm. do you have those accounts set up to pass to somebody automatically if when you pass away one day, right? So
right.
there's different ways to do that. So
there's some other abbreviations out there that are all maybe a mystery to you. So there's POD.
POD, payable on death.
And then there's TOD.
Transfer on death.
That's right. I think those are the main ones.
And then the ITF that you said.
And then the ITF. Trust for. That's right.
Yeah, it's always strange to me. So those are mainly used by what I would call regular banking institutions, where you have your checkings, your savings, right. CDs, money markets. It was always an issue to me that when you open accounts with most banks, they don't ask you to appoint a beneficiary.
Right, they don't.
Like when you do if you open an IRA or you open a life insurance policy or an investment account, you fill out that form, there's always a section that says who are your beneficiaries, who are your contingent beneficiaries. Opening a regular bank account, whether you're doing it online or just sitting at the bank, at least as far as my experience and my clients, they don't ask you that question.
That's right, they don't. So you have to somehow know to ask that. You know, they'll usually be, oh, well, my friend said they put their kids on the account, so I'm going to go do that. Right?
Yeah, I'd say 90% of the clients that I meet with don't know about it. So I always, you know, impose that wisdom upon them and say, well, one of the first things that you can do when you leave here today, go to that bank whatever accounts you and your spouse, if they're married, if you're not joint on, you know, make it payable on death, transfer on death. Or if you are joint, you want it to go to the kids or you know where you want it to go, make those designations. And again, that will just make it easier when the day comes. I see a lot too with if we are dealing with spouses, most of their accounts are joint, but many have that one separate account. What my wife likes to call her secret, shoe and accessory account.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, that's a good idea,
fantastic.
Right?
Fantastic.
Yeah. I have a...
She and I should shop together.
It's a good idea. I have my own account too, but it's called my student debt loan account. Oh. It's not as exciting.
It's not like the cigar and whiskey
account. No, unfortunately, no. But you don't have an account like that, Jay Marie?
Yeah, we do. So Michael has his own account that he purchases things that I can't say no to.
That's the benefit of it, right? It's that guilt-free, I call it the treat yourself account. Yeah.
Right. I'm like, okay, I can't question that. And then I have that shoe and accessory is a great name for it.
So yeah, I mean, a lot of my clients have such accounts that have like that one, most joint, maybe one separate, and they don't realize that, oh, hey, if I pass away, that doesn't automatically just go to my spouse. So one thing to do, most don't like the idea of adding their spouse as a joint owner because of that reason. It's my separate special
That's
account.
Right.
But you can make that payable on death, transfer on death, in trust for, depending on the term that the particular institution uses, and just make sure it goes to the, in this situation, the spouse, should something happen automatically.
Yeah, Phil, what happens if you don't do that? Where does that money go?
That is a fantastic question, John. That's a fantastic question. So it has to go through some kind of formal court proceeding, most likely. If I have a will, probate, right? If I don't have a will, administration. And the process is going to be much more difficult, time-consuming, expensive than just going passing automatically. And B, depending on how things are set up or not set up, it may not go where you intend for it to go.
Yeah, if you don't have a will, then it may go to somewhere that you don't really intend.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, not someone totally outside the family, but...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, just because they're family doesn't mean you like them or wanted to go to them, right? Doesn't always...
Right.
Or like I always say, you know, without a will, you're married and you have kids, you think it all goes to your spouse.
But doesn't it just sit there in the bank if nobody does anything and it just...
Well, that too. Yeah, if you don't do anything. Yeah, most people like it.
Because the bank's not going to go through any effort saying, hey, there's been no activity on this account. What do we do?
They're not
going to do that.
They don't like to give away money if they don't have to.
True. That's true.
They'd rather hold that
but
money.
But who does? Yeah.
Well, eventually it goes to unclaimed funds, which is somewhere we always...
Okay. Sure. Okay, yeah.
Many people think it goes to, right, you probably hear all the time too, that the state takes it.
That's right.
It's not really true. I mean, eventually it's supposed to what they call escheat to the state.
Right.
But I've had clients come in with accounts that are 20 years stagnant.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're sitting in unclaimed funds.
Yeah. That's actually, every listener today, when you have an opportunity, go and to just type in New York State unclaimed funds into Google.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And
yeah.
it brings it up and you type your name in the little search box. Yeah. And
type in your name and search. Yeah.
I found some. One time I think we didn't claim a New York State refund that we didn't see the check and it was sitting there for a year. So there could potentially be money there for everybody or do it for your family. You could be the bearer of fantastic news for somebody.
We always check when we're doing an estate and there's more often than not, there's accounts or checks out there, unclaimed checks.
Yeah, dividend checks for certain accounts, things of that nature. So there's quite often things sitting out there they don't realize, but you should not plan for that. The plan should be for everything to pass automatically.
Right. So kind of to build on that, we're talking about adding beneficiaries to an account. But sometimes we get into the conversation, if you're older and should you put your kids on the account joint with you or should you put them on as a beneficiary?
That's a great question too. And first, it depends, how old the kids are, first of all. But even if they are older and adults, many people don't like the idea of their kids being joint on the account because if you're joint on the account, it's your account. You're each 100% owner, right? So if I wanted to go in and take all the money out and run away with it, I'm allowed to. The bank's not going to stop me.
Right.
And that's some people are okay with that. And especially as, our more, much older clients, they may want someone joint on the account to have that account pass automatically and have instant access to that and manage it while they're alive. Which we can accomplish also by beneficiary designations and a power of attorney. But we do see joint quite often.
Right. A lot of people think that's a great way to have their kids help them out. And it is. There's a risk, though. What if you have four children and you put one child on it? And we may have to get back to that question because we have a call here.
Oh, great.
We have John from Colony on the phone. Morning, John. How you doing?
Good morning, Dave. I got a couple of short, quick questions for you, if I may.
Sure, go ahead.
Is there such a thing as a spendthrift trust in the discretionary trust?
There is. You can set up a spendthrift trust. What it really means is you're leaving money to your beneficiary in a trust to try and protect it from their creditors. So you're putting some control over it. And there's a trustee who can give that person money, but you're also protecting them if they're getting into a lot of debt. They can't reach the money in the trust.
And most of our trusts have that general clause. While it's in the trust, before it gets distributed, it has that spendthrift clause that the beneficiary's creditors or judgments can't come after it. But if you want to control it beyond that, once they inherit it, you can have that continuing spendthrift trust that has some conditions on it that doesn't give the person full access but also prevents it from their creditors. So if you have a beneficiary who has certain issues or is already in debt, we can put those limitations in place to protect the funds.
Okay, and what about the discretionary trust?
It's similar. It's pretty much the same thing. So a discretionary trust is giving the trustee the discretion when to distribute the income or the principal. So you can either give the trustee full discretion, right? They distribute it as they see fit, or you can put some guidelines in there as for how the trustees should distribute it. And it can be very specific or very,
Sometimes with the discretionary trust, I refer to it as a wait and see approach. So discretionary being that the trustee can assess the situation when the time comes for distribution to determine whether or not it's appropriate to just simply distribute the funds outright or to hold it back with certain conditions that you can specify.
Could you add this into an already established or revocable trust?
So it's a revocable trust, did you say?
Yeah, can you add this?
If you have a revocable trust, you can, of course, always change it to add in a discretionary trust. If you have an irrevocable trust, we'd have to see if there's a way that we could amend it to add this provision.
Yeah, the answer is usually it depends, which clients don't like to hear.
No,
but
they don't.
We have to review the trust, and if it's depending on how it's drafted, we may or may not be able to add such a provision, or it may be transferring it to a new trust if it's that important to you. But it possibly is the answer.
Okay, one last question, if I may. Can you have dual executor and power of attorney?
Yes, so you absolutely can, and that is quite often. So the executors or trustees first, you can have co-trustees, co-executors, And within the document, we can specify if they can act separately or they have to act together on everything. And if something happens to one, is there someone else that steps up to become a successor co, or can the remaining person act independently? With power of attorney, you can also have co-agents under your power of attorney. And same thing, you can designate if those individuals have to act together, so a little checks and balances built in, or either can act separately, so independently of each other, and that gives more flexibility. So positives and negatives to both types, but you can do that.
Okay. All right. I really appreciate the help. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
Great. Thank you for calling, and we'll be back right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, Executive Woods in Clifton Park, and 130 North Front Street in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, or Phil, please call us during normal business hours Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us in Albany, Clifton Park, or Saratoga offices, call 518-465-7581 or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome back. I'm Jane Marie Schaefer.
And I'm Phil Vacchio.
And it's the second half of the Herzog Law Firm Estate and Medicaid Planning Show. And we are happy to take your calls. We had a great call right before the break. Our number is 518-476-5900 if you would like to call in. And today we've been talking about beneficiaries on accounts and how that's a great way to avoid probate. To get someone on your account, you know, a bank account, if that's all you have that's not in a trust, it would be kind of be silly to have to go through probate for a relatively small bank account.
Yeah.
So you could always change that by putting a beneficiary on that.
Yeah, it could definitely be a waste of time and money just to get access to a potentially small account. You know, there is a procedure that we know of if an estate's worth under $50,000 total, it's called the small estate proceeding, but it's still a formal court proceeding.
It's still, you know,
court. Have to go to court, still have to take time, pay fees, involve certain parties. So oftentimes if we can keep that situation out of the realm of possibility, it's preferable. But you had asked me a question before the break, Jay Marie, about putting children as joint owners or beneficiaries on accounts. And I was saying many people don't want to put kids as joint owners because then they have full access, whereas beneficiary designation, they don't have any interest or control until you pass away. But then that brought my mind to the next part of that question is, what if those kids are really young? You know, what if they're minors?
Right.
And not only minors, you know, minors technically in New York is under 18.
Right.
But so in New York, when you're 18 years old, you're a legal adult. Now, many of you may disagree with that, right?
I disagree with that wholeheartedly.
If you have kids that young. So, you know, you have the opportunity in your documents to define what an adult is to you, and you want your kids to actually get control of their own money. You may not feel they're quite mature enough yet at the age of 18. I don't think I was.
Even 21 is not a full adult.
I know I wasn't.
Yeah.
In my opinion. So.
Exactly, right? So we can control that if we want to. But when it comes to putting young children as beneficiaries on accounts, that gives up that control, right? Because put my kids as a beneficiary on the account and I pass away, they do get full control at the age of 18. Oftentimes under that. So when I'm dealing with, if I have clients who are younger and they have young kids, or I have older clients leaving money to grandkids.
Right.
And my normal advice is we want beneficiaries on everything, right? We want beneficiaries and avoid probates, one of the easiest ways. But in that situation, I say, well, hold on. We may not want to have them as beneficiaries because we're not going to be able to control the distributions to them. So in a situation like that, Jane Marie, what are some options that you give your clients instead of just having it go to them at 18 as beneficiaries?
Well, so because we're always doing a will for a client, even if you have beneficiaries on most of your accounts. So my suggestion would be in the will that we set up a trust for the young children. You can call it a minor's trust or, you know, a children's trust, grandchildren's trust. And that trust, you can set up the age at which the child gets the money. So it could be 25, it could be 30. That's kind of where I'm thinking for my boys right now.
Depending on how they are, right? Depending on how push that back a little bit.
They're 21 and 23 right okay. now. 25, I don't know about. Right? So, I mean, I'm joking. Boys, if you're listening, you're going to get the money. Don't worry. So.
Now, does that trust have to be revocable trust, irrevocable? Does it matter for that in that part of the question?
Well, so you set it up in your will. So you're not even, the trust isn't even going to be set up until you die. So right. at that point, it's an irrevocable trust. So you don't have to create a trust while you're alive. I mean, we may want you to do that for other reasons.
Sure.
But this is just very simple trust in your will. So when you die, if the children are under that age, you're going to have someone to manage it for them.
Right. So we refer to that as a testamentary trust. And we get clients, there's so much confusion around trusts. It's yes. a term that's thrown out quite often in many different ways. And oftentimes it's used incorrectly, right? So
yes.
one of the first things, the confusion is, well, what is a trust? Am I creating it while I'm alive? Is it after death? What exactly even is a trust
yes.
in concept? And it's really, it's usually a document, right?
Right.
So we have that living trust. That's the kind of trust when we talk about revocable and irrevocable. It's a living type of trust that I create and fund while I'm alive. And the one you're referring to now, Jay Marie, where it doesn't really come into existence until I pass away, that's a testamentary trust. And I would say the majority of our wills have those in them, because even if you're not leaving assets to young children outright, mm-hmm. sometimes when we get into that next level of question, hey, what happens if one of your beneficiaries passes away before you?
Mm-hmm.
Who would that beneficiary share go to? And in that scenario, there's a possibility of it, if it's, oh, it's going to go to their kids if they have kids.
Right.
And then there's the potential of young individuals, again, being beneficiaries. So we want that testamentary trust language as a safety net,
right.
if that does happen. And they don't, again, we don't want them getting control at 18, and we can make it 21, 25, 50, if you'd like. 50,
yeah. 50 is pretty good.
That's a good one.
Yeah. So that's a better way to do it. Most people would rather do that. You know, like you said, for our younger parents, if you're setting up a will, you're probably naming guardians for your young children.
Yes.
So you're also going to probably name those guardians as trustees.
So that's a tough question that I have with clients sometimes, because I guess there's two train of thoughts on that, right? Mm-hmm. So the guardian is like the person who's stepping into your parental shoes, like the custodian yes. that's going to make major life decisions and mm-hmm. quote unquote raise that child until they're 18. And you would think that's the person that's going to know their needs the most.
Right.
But sometimes I have a situation where they say, well, this person is very nurturing and caring. I'd want that person mm-hmm. to raise my child, but that person's awful with money.
Right.
And you don't have to make the guardian the same as the trustee, the person who's going to manage the money.
Mm-hmm.
Or say you have a couple that want both sides of the family involved.
Mm-hmm.
Or I want my sister as the guardian, but oh, I want my brother as the trustee because he's good at managing money.
Mm-hmm.
And that way also you can include both sides of a family. So you make sure, well, as best as possible, you make sure that those both sides stay involved in those kids'
right.
lives. So, you know, again, say it every day to my clients. Every situation is different, and you have to look at all facets of the designations. But
choosing a trustee is an important decision. It's pretty tough, and we do get into those discussions about guardian and trustee being the same or not.
Right.
So, what qualities do you kind of look for a trustee when you're?
Well, trustee first and foremost, good with money, not a spender, responsible individual. A lot of times people will look to those individuals in their life that are already involved in some way in the financial field. Like, oh, my brother or sister's an accountant or a financial mm-hmm. advisor. And a lot of times that might be someone you want to consider because they know what to do with money. Not always, but
that's right.
That's the main assumption. The same thing with like a healthcare proxy, right? My brother, my sister's a nurse or a doctor.
Yeah.
That's the automatic person you think of.
Right.
But for trustee, you want someone that's good with money. You want someone who's not, in my opinion, too much older than you as well. So some people say, well, I want to make it my parents. And depending on the age of your parents, that may or may not be wise. Because if you have a 2-year-old child, let's say,
mm-hmm.
and your mom and dad are, let's say, 70,
right.
and you're saying, I want this trust to exist until the child turns 30.
Right.
That's another 28 years.
Yeah.
You have to think, are your parents... A, statistically, are they going to still be around? If they are around.
That would be pretty.
I mean, you don't want to saddle someone who's that old at that point with that responsibility. So if possible, have someone who's, you know, around your age or younger that will A, be around, B, still be, you know, cognitively there enough to manage a job like that.
Right. And you can always pick your parents and then, or someone you're older, and then put a backup in there.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people, they just really trust their parents first, of course, and would prefer for them to be it. But then you could put your sister or your brother as a backup.
Yeah, I've had some clients put like their parent with a condition. Like, my parents, until they're the age of this, and if they're over that age, then I want this person to become trustee. So we can do something creative like that as well to account for that situation. Guardian, I mean, what do you look for there? I guess that's a subjective question.
Yeah, that's I think they don't have to have the financial expertise, but really the person, you know, of course, who's going to take care of your kids and love them the best. But usually a lot of people want them to kind of stay in the same school community.
Yeah, location matters.
Same location. So maybe you don't have family that lives nearby, but maybe you have a close friend, right? And you could have the family involved also, but you may want them to just stay locally.
Yeah.
So that's usually what people look for.
You ever get clients that ask questions about like having family involved, like almost like putting visitation rights language in documents?
Right.
Yeah, I've done that as well. I don't know if that would necessarily be enforceable, right? I guess if there was a contest, it would be. But even if it's not, it's at least guidance follow.
Guidance on your wishes, yeah. I've seen that where they're afraid if it goes to the one side of the family, right, that the other grandparents won't get to see them.
Sure.
Yeah.
Which is a legitimate concern because you have, you know, people that may not have interacted very much while you were alive. And you're counting on them to just do the right thing. So I think sometimes it's a good idea to just have them, even just for instructional purposes, your wishes. I always tell my clients too to do kind of like a family love letter. We have that booklet too that we start giving out more often.
Right, what my family should know.
Yeah, which I think is great because it's the non-legal side of things where you can include all of those wishes that are important to you. You know,
very
maybe
handy,
some messages you want to pass on or certain instructions that aren't quite as of a legal nature but are still important to you for sentimental reasons or life lessons.
Yeah, I mean, that can change when your kids are younger. You may write some things in there about what they like to do, and but as they get older, maybe more life advice that you want to pass on. It can really be whatever you want to put in there.
I think it's a nice thing too because, I mean, that's something that your family could really cherish almost as like a keepsake also when you're gone. It's more of a personal touch to
I like the idea of family history, family stories, because I'm thinking back and, you know, my grandmother would tell stories and I don't remember all of them. So I don't remember some of the history of her family back in Ireland, right? And I'm like,
same with me. My dad used to tell me all kinds of family history things. I wish he had written them down.
Me too. I wish we had written them down.
Yeah.
Right, because I can't remember, like, which town or whatever she was saying. Right?
I'm already forgetting my own stories. I mean, I write down my own stuff.
See, there you go.
Well, that's a different problem.
Is that an issue? Maybe I should get that checked out. I know my wife has all these little notes in her phones about, you know, certain things the babies do at the first ages and whatnot, and, you know, stuff like that, because it is easy to forget the details, and having it written down somewhere is nice to refer back to one day.
Right, to remember these stories. I was at a will signing just briefly last night, and the gentleman was older. His sister was there to sign, and they were talking the same thing about, when did grandpa come over from, you know, Poland? And they were like talking about the family history there.
Yeah.
And I know, I guess they just hadn't seen each other in a while, and they were talking about it, and they wanted to try and remember that before it was lost to them.
Right? Yeah. You're not going to believe this.
It's over, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, I thought we still had a minute. There we go.
You're a minute.
Well, have a wonderful weekend, everyone. Enjoy this first day of fall.
Yes.
We'll be back next week.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you would like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581 or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.